outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Wayne, I think I went down a dark hole that there is no recovery from.
Wow, just since we were last together.
Just since we were last together, yes.
So are you still down that dark hole? Hello, Kyle.
Well, we'll see here. So I put into Copilot, which is my company's, the school's form of ChatGPT. But this was the prompt that I put into to Copilot. I said, create a definition of God's love based on Kyle Rice and Wayne Jacobson's perspective from the God Journey podcast. And this what it said.
This will be interesting. I don't trust AI anyway, but go ahead.
The formulated definition by Copilot, given the information taken off of the God Journey, is from Kyle and Wayne's perspective, God's love is the unconditional, transformative, and relational outpouring of the Father who restores brokenness, shapes our identity as beloved children, and invites us into a life marked by grace rather than religious obligation. It frees us to live in peace, trust, and authenticity, empowered by the Spirit's guidance. This love heals trauma, invites us into freedom, nurtures spiritual growth, and reveals our true identity, not through performance, but through grace and relationship.
Wow. That's not bad.
That's not bad.
So why is this a dark hole?
I don't know. I'm just like, okay, we went here. Like, I'm going to just see how AI would summarize some of the content that you and I have been putting out in regards to God's love. And I thought that was very intriguing. I thought that definition was pretty cool, actually. I was like, oh, okay. If that's what AI is taking away from our content, then I think we're in a good space.
If that's what the listeners are taking away from our podcast, that'd be good space.
That'd be a very good space. Yes, that is very true.
I'm not sure I want chatbots converted to the love of God. I don't know how well that will work out. Maybe that's the dark hole you're worried about.
That it very well could be the dark hole, especially given that now I could probably type in through the God Journey's perspective and start asking questions about how it would answer the meaning of life or how it would do relationships and you and I are not a part of that conversation at all. It's just pulling content from stuff that you and I've put out there in the world, which would be very interesting.
You think that's pulling it from the descriptions of the podcast, or you think it's actually listening to a bunch of podcasts and coming to that conclusion?
I don't know. It definitely did source both the God Journey podcast, as well as the website and blogs. Those were sourced in its content.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I don't know how deep of a dive it did to get that definition for us. But yeah, it was interesting.
What a strange world we live in. I was talking to a couple of 20-year-olds last week, young 20s, like 21, 22. And we got talking about AI because of a book thing that I've had sent to me that was somewhat AI generated. Mm-hmm. And he's training to be an English teacher. And so we're talking about just AI from a generation. They were just looking and said, AI is going to ruin us. Mm. And I'm from that age, they were just talking about the problem. And they're in college right now, in the university.
Yeah.
And they're being encouraged by their professors to use AI in their writing and sourcing and all that kind of thing. They're being encouraged to use it. And they're just saying, this is ruining everything. And I'm surprised young people were saying, this is not going to be good. And even he was talking about, how do you do a book study on a book that was written by AI? Because part of a book study is going back to the author and where does this book come from out of their life and experience? And how does it make sense? And all those kinds of things. And if you don't have that, if it's just generated by chatbot that ran around and got a bunch of examples of stuff and then compiled its own thing. And they were saying, I said, it's up to your generation to fix it. And they both looked at me and said, I don't think ours can. It better be the generation after us. Going, oh, you've given up at 20 and 21. You've given up? Really? My gosh.
Well, the challenge is I just saw a book that just got published that I want to go back in and read. I'll send you the title. I can't remember what it was just off the top of my head.
You sent it to me, but the listeners don't get
it. Well, I'll get to the listeners as well. I'll send it to you. You can post it on the blog.
We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
Yes. But it was about what does it look like to parent kids in an AI generation? So what does it look like for me specifically and my age demographic to parent my girls who are 3 and 5? What does it look like to parent them in a way to prepare them to navigate AI, and just how challenging that is, because we as humanity don't know. And so, especially as a parent of young children, what does it look like to help prep them for a world that I can't even conceptualize what it's going to be like in 15 years? Yep. And so how do you prepare them both in more immorality and character and sense of self when you have this whole new technology that we have no idea how to navigate, that literally we have no infrastructure for?
Yes. And we have no idea how it's going to morph. Even two or 3 years out, much less 15.
Yeah, with how fast it's exponentially growing between that and the robotic technology and some of the other things like quantum computing and some of the other things that are being generated there. It's an interesting space to be a parent of young children.
Well, this is interesting into how some churches are currently using AI.
Ooh,
this okay. I got from a podcast called The Russell Moore Show. It's by Christianity Today.
Okay.
And he was interviewing Jonathan Haidt, which I know you, I both read him and really mm-hmm. enjoy some of what his stuff is. And they were talking about technology, how it affects kids. And then as part of that show, it came up, this is what Russell Moore said. He said, it seems that any kind of new technology has two immediate early adopters. One of them is porn. Mm-hmm. The other is religion. That's problematic right there, right?
That is an interesting comparison. That's two interesting categories. Yep.
And he says, we can see this with every single development. Mm. Wall Street Journal did a big article about AI companies that now provide to churches AI tools that are able to track your people, tell you how they're doing, tell you who hasn't been to church in a while, because it immediately picks up their phone's presence when they come into the building. It tells you the basis on what Bible verses they're looking up, whether or not they're in trouble in terms of anxiety or depression or addiction or something like that. Who needs a pastoral visit? Who ought to be asked for a donation right now? And who shouldn't be? And so I wonder, what do you think about this? That was the question to Jonathan Haidt. And Jonathan Haidt says, this is insane. I mean, it just seems to treat your parishioners like cattle going through a slaughterhouse and processing data on them.
Ugh.
Can you imagine?
That turns my stomach so hard. I can't even tell you how creeped out I am right now. Like, that is so bad. And to be a good church member, are they going to require you to have the app on their phone that then is tracking them and giving them biofeedback? So the heart rate sensing, how are they doing? What is their search engine history? You know, next level accountability. And oh my gosh, that's just
And how many people are looking at their phones following along with the sermon, and how many others are browsing somewhere to
play Candy Crush?
Yes. Oh my gosh, to think about who would have this idea to say, this is a good, let's implement this technology. So we don't have to get to know our people anymore. We can just get data on them, mined from their phones as they walk in and walk out, even down to who we can ask for a donation right now, because they've hit the mother load somewhere. And who's in such dire straits that it's a bad, this makes my heart hurt. This is far away from the community Jesus envisioned, to a manipulative institution that treats people like cattle. What a good analogy that is.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it really is, because they're perceived as the users, right? They're just a point of contact that is providing fuel for the system. It's not actually engaging with humanity on a conversation about who is this incredible God that we're trying to serve and we're in doing relationship with. It's, oh my gosh, it's statistics and running reports. And, you know, like, how long is it going to be till when you're sitting there and you have an Apple Watch and they see you Googling something else or searching something else, or you're starting to nod off, then all of a sudden it's buzzing you and sending you like a haptic electrical shock through your watch because you're not paying attention to the sermon and a most effective way, or oh my word,
it would only be to help you keep your focus in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely, to stay attentive and really bask in the spiritual glory that's going on right now.
Shows how far we've gotten from just Jesus's presence alone being more engaging, exciting than anything else that we could possibly try and do. And so instead we're trying to keep people entertained and motivated and focused. And
oh my gosh, I watched this video from a mega church in Texas, and it was like, it blew my mind. I mean, they got pretty notable a while ago when they had, like, for their Christmas concert, they had drummers that were like swinging from the ceiling, drumming on their drum kits and like all this. And if they just continue like to get bigger and bigger and bigger, like it is like at the level of a Vegas show. I mean, they're bringing water onto their stage and creating oceans and pools and live animals. And I mean, it's like, what is happening right now? Like this is where the combination of pretty much unchecked financial resources and religiosity collide, and it's trying to meet the masses where they're at. And oh my gosh, where do you go from there? Like, what? I don't know.
Yeah. Once you decide to motivate people spiritually through their senses, then you just got to keep amping that up. It's not Jesus on the inside inviting us on a journey that's worthy of our time and attention and brings joy and whatever to our hearts. Now we've just trying to keep people, I don't know if it's entertained or whatever, because the idea is to get them in the building, if that's the idea. And you ramp up the entertainment value to get that to happen, which was already happening 40 years ago in much more limited ways than what's allowed now. With, I mean, even eventually smoke and mirrors and video stuff's not going to be enough.
Oh, absolutely.
Drummer swinging from the ceiling.
We actually had a guest speaker come and was talking in my advanced counseling skills class this week. And she specializes in trauma. She's a nationally renowned trauma therapist and is a believer. And so we were having a really interesting conversation because she was talking about the actual neurological and physical healing properties of ancient cathedrals and how neuroscientists have been going in and neuropsychologists have been going in and studying the vibration effects of pipe organs in these ancient cathedrals and how it actually, they're actually able to trace neurological and physiological repair in these sanctuaries through the musical vibrations that are being created in these sanctuaries, which is really intriguing. Because they said the combination of the color that's coming through the stained glass and the vibrations that are being created by the pipe organs are actually able to be now scientifically measured to trace the physiological and neurological healing of the body while participating in worship.
Wow. Sarah and I had that a bit of that conversation going through The Body Keeps the Score, where it talks about chanting in communal environments is one of the things that really soothes where trauma resides in the heart. And think about some of the stuff when you watch the papal enclaves and like a new pope and all the chanting they're doing, I'm thinking, what is this about? But when you think about how much trauma was in our world, not just today, but back then when things were much more barbaric, how much torment people had to be going through, and these actual practices that we look back and just kind of go, that's a bunch of religious gobbledygook, but they were actually very helpful in soothing and healing places where trauma resides in people's minds. And the same thing you're saying here, which is just intriguing to me that they would have come to that somehow without any scientific anything. It just, this seems to help, this doesn't help. So
And not being able, you know, not being able to trace it, but having, honestly, though, having the freedom to say, Lord, is this helping people, right? Like, because this, you know, the scientific revolution was, if we can't taste it, if we can't measure it, if we can't smell it, like, if we can't manage it with our five senses, then it doesn't exist. Like, if we can't test it, then it's not a reality.
If we can't quantify it and measure the actual hard scientific fact.
what they're finding is a lot of things that I would say that God put in the world intentionally to bring healing into his people, into his beloved, through some very unique stuff like sound vibration, like color, like smell. All of those things were pushed to the fringe as, oh, it's just religious gobbledygook or just like weird Eastern mysticism or whatever, because we can't test it. But now technology is catching up to where they're actually able to test the neurological and physiological feedback from those experiences and are saying, oh, these people have been doing this for 1,000 years and finding very deep spiritual, physical, and emotional benefits to these rituals, these experiences through these routines. And it's actually causing physical health to people. It's bringing physical health to people.
And yet Jesus didn't come to teach us how to build cathedrals with the right vibrating harmonics, or teach us to chant or do any of those things. So I just wonder where it is that Jesus' presence in us would do those things. But when we got away from that, then we had to rely on other things to try and soothe something that Jesus wasn't already soothing in our own hearts and minds.
See, and I wonder, like, my question is like, okay, Lord, like, were you that creative, Father, that your access points to our heart and bringing healing into our lives was so diverse that, like, to me, that's kind of cool and mind-blowing to me, because it's like, okay, they didn't know this, and yet was that a spirit-led decision of, hey, if we bring in like this type of organ or this type of color or these like aromas into this experience, does that help facilitate a connection with the Holy Spirit? Does that help us understand a different part of God's character and his spirit and the way that he interacts with us and the way that he's created our bodies? I don't know. It's an intriguing question to me.
It would be intriguing. I don't know the answers to any of those things.
Because it's like, is it a substitute for the presence of God? So like I'm not resonating, I'm not connecting with the Holy Spirit, I'm not connecting with his kingdom in the world around me, and so I'm looking for a substitute. Or is it actually connecting with God's kingdom, but then, you know, later on down the road, it gets twisted and manipulated and changed into a religious thing instead of a pursuit of the Father heart of God? I don't know.
Me either. Ancient history in the cathedrals.
Yeah.
A podcast we'll do next week. Down the road. Anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we're halfway through this podcast without even introducing ourselves. Can you imagine that?
That's pretty wild.
It is pretty wild. Best thing you heard this week?
Best thing I heard this week got sent to me from my wife. She sent me a quote that she heard while listening to a podcast, and it was from C.S. Lewis. And the quote was, "My prayer is that when I die, all hell rejoices that I'm out of the fight."
Wow. So you want hell rejoicing when you're gone because you're off the battlefield.
That was an interesting quote. There's part of me that definitely connects with that of like, yeah, I hope that the expression of the kingdom of God that I'm able to live out by just who God's created me to be and through his healing work in my life and through my relational connection with him, that's causing turbulence in the enemy's plan to destroy people. And that it's causing enough turbulence that when I'm gone, it is noticeable. Like that would be intriguing to me, because that's...
It would be intriguing. My hope would be there'd be other people who are influenced by me who can keep that turbulence going on.
Oh, completely. Yes, yeah. that there's an ongoing disruption from just continuing to help people, especially like helping people connect with who God's created them to be in a wholehearted way. Because it's not like making more mini Kyles or mini Waynes. It's giving people encouragement and empowerment to say, who has God created you to live in the world today? What does that look like? And living that out in an authentic way is causing an intentional disruption to what the enemy's wanting to do to kill, steal, or destroy the work of God in this world.
Yeah. Well, I hope not to attract any attention from hell when I'm alive or dead. It didn't serve Job particularly well. When no,
Satan that's fair.
Yeah.
He that's was valid.
Yeah. My favorite thing this week came from someone sent me this quote from, it's from Augustine Buckner. I'm not sure who it is. Said, Jesus Christ's purpose in your life isn't to make you better at dragging around a heart of stone. Instead, he came to enliven your very heart that we might have life and have it in abundance. He came so that you would be a contradiction to sin and death in the world and be recognizably Christ-like.
Ooh, okay. I feel like our best things that we heard are in sync with one another a little bit in that regard.
They are. And I love that living as a contradiction in the world. And I think about that, even some of the things we talked about last week with all the vitriol and anger and polarization and inability to love well beyond my own tribe. Yeah. For people to live as a contradiction, even through pain, even through suffering, even through grief, where there's a joy. And the purpose is not that we're acting better in the face of adversity. Yeah. It's that Jesus actually puts a joy in our heart that enlivens us so that we're not living by the dictates of this age. We're not living by what we see physically. We're living with this, my joy in you, your joy full kind of reality that transcends the circumstance and enough love that goes beyond my tribe and what serves me well. And that alone would be a contradiction to the way the world lives.
Yes, it would be. And I think it's going to be intriguing to see what characteristics of God's kingdom, especially in this coming season of humanity, what elements of God's kingdom are going to feel most like a contradiction to the cultural lean of that time. It's going to be intriguing to me, like, because I think there's different characteristics of God's heart that have been lived out in different spans of humanity. Like his character or his different attributes of his characteristic have been more of a contradiction to culture during that season of time. And I'll be very intrigued to see what that looks like in this coming time, this coming age.
And I want my life to be a contradiction to the world we live in, that my reality isn't coming from the morning newspaper, or the newspaper, like that's old fashioned, from the websites, from the media feeds, from whatever. My intrinsic joy and calm and comfort comes from inside with the presence that we talked about a couple of weeks ago that we get to dwell in, not have to call up, not have to manufacture, but the presence that's always with us and the comfort that gives us, even in the midst of adversity, that like Paul talks about, we're perplexed, but we're not destroyed. We've got this going on out here, but this is going on in here, and that's growing in greater beauty every day. And to me, that's the joy of a real engagement with presence instead of just trying to live out Christian ideals and ethics and doctrines. It's to really engage the presence and let that presence shape how we view the things we're going through. So Sarah and I can go through grief because we've lost something significant here. And at the same time, not grieve as the world grieves and know that there's something more real in our hearts even than the things we've had on the outside.
It also makes me think back to even just the conversation about how churches are using AI or potentially could use AI in regards to connection with the people that are coming there. Like that just to me sounds so insanely oppressive in regards to behavior management, behavior modification, you know, making sure that my external is in better condition when I come to perform in that environment, because now they're reading my data and they're keeping a log on me, and they're the pastors are getting a weekly report on how my spiritual performance for the week has been. And do I need to have a visit from a pastoral counselor or what that looks like? And it's like, gosh, like that seems so oppressive and strangling in comparison to the idea of dwelling in his presence and remaining in that space and not having to worry about the external pressures or concerns of the world, but being able to continue to rest in his love and peace that is dwelling all around me all the time.
And for my life, that's very different. I find technology and all the input that comes to my life through technology, and some of it's good. I mean, people send me quotes or links to things, but just the sheer weight of all of that and the amount of time it consumes, it puts me in a different space than those moments when I just really engage the presence.
Yeah.
And the perspective that comes from that, that's so different from the way the world works, even the way religion tries to work the world. And it's still back to performance and having the right mental logic and then trying to implement that logic instead of it coming. What I liked about this quote is it comes out of fullness. The fullness that's in our heart is what allows us to live in the world. A part of the book that Toby and I are working on, the whole section on, are we life givers because God's life is in us, so we're giving life, or do we lack life, so we're trying to grab it from everybody that goes by? Instead of life givers, we're life suckers. We're trying to find something to titillate, something to give me a modicum of dopamine hit in the middle of my day, instead of finding the fullness inside of him that then shapes the way I get to live in the world. And I find technology, and it's only getting worse, but I find technology very helpful too. I'll use it every day for helpful things. But too much of a good thing puts the framework of my mind in the wrong place and invites me away from presence and more toward trying to work everything out, even trying to get this thing back on a video feed for those that enjoyed watching the video feed. And we just somehow the website, I thought I had it worked out again today, and nope, it's not working. So we've still got to troubleshoot that. But just when technology works, it's wonderful as a tool. Yeah. It doesn't work. It's a freaking nightmare that puts my head in the wrong space.
Well, and again, I think it's the idea of it being a tool as well, right? It is a tool that we can use for good or for bad. And I wrestle with that because I think about the difference between, you know, whether it be technology or AI or some of these things, that these resources that we have access to, versus making sure that my heart, the foundation of my perspective, is coming from a grounded place in God's love, that is coming from a grounded place in experiential connection with his presence, with his heart, with his relationship, and that it's not just that I'm not finding a substitute or counterfeit or alternative in the other things that the world might offer. Because there's all these different resources, all these different things out there in the world that I can use as tools to bring a positive influence in the world. But if I'm not starting from a place of experiential relational grounding in his heart and maintaining that, like the quote that I had the other day, where it was like, I don't want to get into that complacency where I'm looking at like strengths that I had in the past or wars that I won in the past or whatever, but there's that ongoing relational connection and dwelling in his presence, and that is the primary thing that's fueling my existence in the world.
Yeah, it really comes down to, am I living from a place of fullness?
Yeah.
Or am I living from a place of emptiness where I'm trying to find, whether it's technology or people, I'm trying to fill up something that feels lacking.
Yeah.
And the real joy, I think, of a well-loved life is that I get to live from fullness. When I'm in that place of fullness, there's enough, man. There's enough to love, to care, to be alive, to do whatever. And when you live from that place of emptiness, and I'm trying to find something today that will make me feel alive or make me feel something outside myself, that's a tough place to live from. And the idea that it's out there somewhere, and what we find is we find temporary things to fill the hole.
Yes.
But not sustainable depth that fills my life for who I am. And I think that's a good question to ask. Am I living from fullness today? And if I'm not, how do I find my way to fullness in presence?
Yes.
Rather than how do I grab onto something else that will satisfy for the moment, but will create a longer term gnawing in my heart or something that I lack.
And I think that's the really important piece in that is we all are going to feel depleted. We all are going to feel like we are, that our tank is getting empty, but it's when we are feeling that, where are we going? Are we returning? Have we created that familiarity where we're like, no, I'm going back to my source. I'm reconnecting with God's heart. I'm re-engaging with presence. I'm building in extra time for presence and a concentrated presence in my life because I'm feeling depleted. Or am I looking somewhere else? Am I going somewhere else? Am I seeking a quick fix here versus, because sometimes, and I, correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes it feels like, oh, well, getting into his presence, it's going to take too long. It's not going to be a quick fix. It takes concentrated effort. It takes concentrated focus. It takes me taking some time out of my day, whereas I can grab my phone or I can open up that candy bar or I can have that drink or I can do, I mean, the plethora of things that we do that can be that brief counterfeit substitution to presence. And it feels like, oh, well, it's, you know, it takes a little more work to get into presence. What do you think about that? Do you find that it takes a little more work to get into presence versus some of the other counterfeits that the world offers?
Well, certainly the other things are more readily available. If you find fullness from food or TV or a good movie or whatever, then you go look for that. To me, I find presence is about focus. It doesn't take time. It's not like, well, I got to set aside an hour to somehow connect. And if I have to, then I would say there's something about that connection. I've talked about this worship, quote unquote, experience I was in Holland one time where it was an hour long. This worship leader was drawing, and I use worship in air quotes, the leader taking us in this process. Okay, let's start with confessing all our sins to God, and we've got to take care of all that. And then we've got to lay all our anxieties at his feet. So by the time, an hour of jumping through these various hoops that were very similar to the Old Testament washings, you know, get everything clean before you get there. If that's the mentality and that's the mindset about engaging God and that's the framework you live under, then it is a lot of work and it's very time consuming. For me, it's just pausing enough to sense the drawing that there's every day beneath the busyness and hecticness of my life is this drawing. And if I pause long enough, and I mean, like sometimes 12, 15 seconds. I'm not talking about an hour of prayer to get myself into God's presence. Yeah. I think we're manufacturing something if we do that. To me, it's much simpler to just relax a moment, find that space where you're not distracted. I mean, it's hard to do it at my desk. I rarely do this here. There's a place in the backyard I go or a walk through the neighborhood or something that allows my heart to just reconnect with what's real. And then try to discern in that moment of engaging reality, what have I been going through in the last 6-7 hours that's had my attention? And where was God in that or where wasn't he in that in terms of what was it inviting me to fullness or allowing me to share fullness with others? Or was it an attempt for Wayne to medicate his grief or struggle or pain with something that's momentarily titillating, but long-term empty. And so I find it's much more about focus. It's not so much for me about time and energy. And I wonder, giving back to what we said about AI and corporate and the sanctuary of cathedrals being placed for worship. I wonder if part of that has been, I know my mentality growing up, even my early days of pastoring was, we come here on Sundays to fill up. So we can make it through the rest of the week. That was the mentality. And even said to people, hey, if you're not here to fill up, how do you expect to make it through the week? And we didn't teach people that the fullness comes from our engagement with God. And that can be corporate, but not necessarily corporate and not once a week. And once we decided this was the place you had to fill up, then we had to keep altering music and lights and drama and whatever to, again, titillating the senses and then leaving people empty for the rest of the week because you weren't supposed to fill up elsewhere. This is where you fill up instead of No, we fill up inside of presence. And if you don't know what that is, I would encourage people just stop a minute and ask Jesus, teach me presence. Teach me how I slide into that and embrace the fullness of that. And then allow my heart to come away from that time in the fullness that it already is, but now that I see it, instead of leaning into that part of my soul that's feeling abandoned or lost or down or depressed or whatever, and then I'm off looking for something else to sustain me. I hope people are learning that. I had that moment yesterday. I was working on, I've got so much to do. I'm just in town a few days, then I'm out again, and I just back to an old lifestyle I'm not sure I'm going to love, but one of these things is for fun and one is for helping other folks. But because we're coming up on our 50th college reunion. So Sarah and I are going back to Oral Roberts University to, if the airplanes are flying because of the, that could be a nightmare. I might not be going anywhere in the next little bit. But I just, in the middle of all that stuff, I just felt that drawing. I just read a verse in scripture for something else I was doing. It wasn't even a tender moment with God. I was researching something. And that verse just, I could sense it, man. The Holy Spirit just saying, come away. And I've learned to respect that. I don't think I generate that whenever I want.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in when are you inviting me? And boy, that was a reorienting moment yesterday. It just came out of nowhere. Wasn't looking for it. Didn't generate it myself. Just felt called. And in feeling called, responded to it.
Yeah, I definitely was trained in that experience of you've got to go through the long prayer session, the big worship session. I mean, especially in my YWAM experiences, it was like, okay, in order to really get there, to really have that powerful encounter with God, we've got to do all of these different things. And sometimes it was really cool because it was like going through some of the traditional Hebrew ways of connecting, like some of the old rituals and practices that the Hebrew community did. And yet it really felt, in general, it felt very manufactured most of the time. And yet it felt like, okay, this is what it takes in order to get into presence. And so then it was like, man, if that's what it takes to get into presence. But I love the idea what you said about Sundays being the day that we have to fill up. That's when we fill our tank. And so hopefully you've got a big tank because we're going to fill up once this week. And then you're going to be coming in like coughing, sputtering, backfiring on empty the next week into our service and then getting you filled back up again. And it's like, well, is that at all how Jesus modeled living for his disciples and dwelling in presence and being engaged with the people around you? And it just, man, it didn't connect with it at all. Now, did he go to synagogue? Yes. Did he do different corporate or larger group gatherings? Yeah, sure he did. But that wasn't placed on this pedestal of this is where you fill up, this is where you have to go in order to be able to survive the week and not just completely get depleted in your spiritual space.
Yeah. And whether it's a large group gathering or of a house size fellowship, whatever, if people come from fullness, how much more powerful is that? If people come out of need and desperation, I've got to have my fix of Jesus today. That's a very different community, particularly if you're in a smaller home group kind of setting where, as my friend Toby likes to define it, the difference between a branch that's bearing fruit and a thorn that seeks blood, because that's it has no, the thorn is a branch that doesn't have life in itself. And so it becomes, instead of being the giver of life, which a healthy branch is by fruit, by whatever, the thorn seeks to draw blood. And I go, oh man, that's a great picture for thinking about how it is that I live in the world. Am I out seeking to get from others? Exploitive. I've got to get this from even listeners from the God Journey, even emails. It's encouraging. I've got to get something versus, man, my tank is full in Christ. And part of that fullness does come in relationships with other people that I don't need, not the desperation relationships, just being in a good conversation with somebody who's experiencing fullness as well, or the drawing towards it, or the desire for it. And it's just the conversations that form around presence are so much more powerful than people who are, I need something, I got to get a fix, you got to have an answer for me, you've got to just. And if we could learn to live from fullness, that's what I hope people get a hunger for. And I hope listeners to the God Journey over time, I got this from somebody last week, somebody we'd hoped to see when we were in Canada and they weren't able to come down and join us. This is from Kevin. He said, realizing maybe for the first time, the truth of flesh and spirit, the yoke of the spirit, void of religious tendencies, is truly easy. And even to say the burden is light is an understatement. So free, so good, so perfect. Finally, we are spiritual open books, not pushing, not just walking through openings in life in perfect, but just walking through openings in life in perfect timing and not by our orchestration. Now, when I first met this guy, man, he was a doer. He was a worker. He was lovely, conscientious believer. Nothing to say negative about, except it was all coming from him in terms of intensity and work and trying to manipulate things. To read this from him and the arc of his journey over these last few years, it brought him to a place of saying, boy, this yoke is easy. When I'm engaged with him as presence and not with the religious tendencies of having to work my way into him or into it, then it really, truly is easy. The burden is light. And we find ourselves in those moments with just, we walk into a circumstance at the perfect timing for whatever it is that God might want me to add to the moment or whatever. And I love that. I love the reality of that. Most of all, I love seeing that transition in my friend. I love when I hear from people miles afterwards and see where the journey has led them to live from fullness instead of trying to orchestrate it.
Well, the sad part to me is I contrast that to the experience that so often, not all the time, but so often is experienced in the corporate gathering, because it's like this perfect storm of chaos, because we've trained people to come to this Sunday morning experience to get filled up, and that's going to be their tank. That's going to fill their tank for the week. So then when they're coming to the next Sunday morning gathering, then they're dry and they're weary and they're empty. And so now we've trained people to come to our services as emotional and spiritual black holes that are empty and are just sucking energy. It's no wonder that people who are in full-time ministry, especially in those capacities, are getting burnt out, are feeling overwhelmed, or feeling the incredible pressure to perform more, to come up with better programming, to come up with new things, new outlets, because it's like, well, we've got all of these empty, drained, exhausted black holes, spiritual and emotional black holes, that are coming needing from us. And yet that was part of the institutional structure that was created, the dependency of this experience. And you have to get filled up here. And yet then it's just this creating this cycle that doesn't lead anyone to celebration of presence or joy in the kingdom. It does the exact opposite of that.
And nobody would have wanted that or orchestrated it. It just resulted from the fact that we wanted people to be dependent on this, instead of finding their dependency on Christ. And whatever we do as the community of the King is to encourage the dependence on presence and not our delivery system of it.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.